This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 6th of March, 1972. The title of this lecture is F. Enning Staff Members, Part 1. This tape is 94 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
And this is the 6th of March, 1972. This is a lecture to establishment officers. It has to do with this lecture quite a few items, and the overall title of it probably be F. Enning Staff Members. The work of the establishment officer is nothing if it does not result in production. Why not? Well, from the staff member's viewpoint, it would immediately put him in poverty. From his morale point of view, it'll immediately put him in apathy. Now, there's been so much talk during the last 110 years, actually, so much talk since the Comte de Saint-Simon opened his face back in France in the earlier part of the 19th century and put his and everybody else's foot in it. He said, "The whole of society should be geared to its lowest member." Those are the famous words of the Comte de Saint-Simon. Now, very often they call him Saint-Simon as though he's a saint or something. Actually, he was a renegade Napoleonic officer who, after he kicked the bucket sometime around 1849, something like that, all the rest of his people were rounded up and thrown in the local hoosegow. They were very out, something or other. There's an earlier one, sometime in the 18th century, of somebody talking about communes. But it's not really the beginning of this era of the reward of the downstat. But that began a history of a continuing encroachment into the world of production of the downstat. He became more and more and more important. And eventually, the weight of him became overwhelming. And he started to wreck economic patterns, bring on major recessions, and so forth. Had a ball. Now, the idiocy of this, if you were to go down on Skid Row and watch somebody there who was on canned heat and who can barely get up from the bench and only scrounges a quarter to buy himself another can of canned heat. You know what canned heat is, don't you? There it comes close to being the lowliest member of society. So we should obviously all go bum quarters on the street to eat canned heat, according to the Comte de Saint-Simon. This movement was carried forward by a nut named Marx, who was deified by the British, with a chair in the British Museum marked with his plate, "Marx sat here." You know, it's not George Washington sat here in England, it's Marx sat here. And I'm not being unduly harsh along in this line, because I believe that the people who are out of luck should be cared for, but I do not believe that they have the right to crash everything in sight. And the trouble with them is they can't produce, and they are unhappy. They share with the criminal the peculiarity that they can't work. They are a problem in psychotherapy, not a problem in politics or economics. Wrong field. Entirely, completely the wrong field. This movement moved forward until there were riots of nihilism. Everything that they had in France was exported to Russia because Russia thought that was civilization. And the ballet and out 2D and all this other stuff. And so in Russia, in the Russian universities, a movement known as the nihilists. Nihilism means nothingness. The movement could be best described as wreck everything. Make nothing out of everything. Now, some nihilist will tell me, oh, no, there are techniques by which you make nothing out of everything. Oh, yes, there are. But that's a psychotic technology. That was hand in glove with the original, well, that was actually came up to a big build-up and then eased off into anarchy, another political philosophy that says there should be no government, with which I agree heartily. But not because there couldn't be a government, but because there isn't. And the nihilist gave birth, you might say, in the universities of Russia to the anarchist. And there was a sort of a little revolt against the anarchist within his own ranks, and the communist came into view. Somebody must have read Plato's Republic. I even think they taught them to read in Russian universities. You see, I'm charitable. And Plato's Republic, which was apparently, I don't know the connection, but there must be one, has to do with Lycurgus's Sparta. And this is all ancient political philosophy. And very shortly after this fellow Lycurgus built up Sparta, he hung him, by the way. I think he told him, I think it was he, who said that that they would carry on this philosophy of commune-ing until he came back. And the elders of Sparta all agreed to do that, and then he left and never bothered to return, so they were hung with it. The effect of this, the immediate effect on this, was for Spartan arms and conquest to do a considerable resurgence and take a lot of territory. But wasn't too long thereafter, not too long thereafter, that the cows and sheep were grazing on the streets of Sparta. It was a gone area. The Spartans were the last of the Dorians, and they wound up in a spin of communism and then spun on out of history. A very, very failing philosophy. Now, maybe I'm shortening it up too much and giving you too much simplicity, but this isn't a talk on political philosophy. This is a talk on downstatism. Now, marching forward, the Fabian Society, such people as George Bernard Shaw and so on, with such people, was formed in England. And it was just down the road from Marx's headquarters. Marx jumped up someplace in Germany, and he couldn't make it at anything he ever did. He couldn't work, and he couldn't produce in any way, shape, or form. And he dramatized his name. German money is named marks. And Marx hated money. He never could make any. And he was finally rammed around all over the place, just to give you a thumbnail sketch, wound up in England, and a rich man's son by the name of Engels shelled out some bucks to him, some pounds, in order to carry on. And he sat down in the British Museum, and with this vast panorama of the activities of life before him from his chair in the British Museum, he dreamed up the rest of it. People do not know that the pattern of Marxist communism is medieval Germany, and he deified medieval Germany, and he says so in his textbooks. You can't read much of his material, but when you, that is to say, it's hard to read any Germanic type think is, with the nouns and verbs all hindside too. But this boy idealized in his works medieval Germany. Medieval Germany, the medieval state, was the totalitarian state where all commerce was regulated by the state. Now, he substituted the harsh, eat them all up, throw them in the prison, off with their heads, Germanic Teuton idea of civilized treatment. For that, he substituted the word state. And that is the basic evolution of this thing called communism as done by Marx. There are other types of communism than Marxist communism, but is the one that's prevalent. So the ideal he would have there is that the state is run as a total being which has the power of life and death over everyone in it and who regulates all of their commerce and all of their actions. And this is called, in later days, totalitarianism. Now, don't be fooled by people who tell you, well, there's communism and fascism, and they were at war. There is no faintest difference between communism and fascism. Fascism is a word employed by the communists to mask the fact that the fascist, so-called fascist, was in actual fact National Socialism. And all that National Socialism is a type of communism. There is no difference between the philosophy of Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin. There's no difference between that basic philosophy in Germany or Russia. Nazi means Nationalsozialistik, and it's just a shortened term for National Socialism, Nazi. And this is super totalitarianism. And they've long since ceased to be able to reward the downstart. Now, this is the world, however, we live in, where totalitarianism is the encroaching thing. Most of the things which you hear in terms of political philosophy, personnel handling, and so forth, are said to make a further advance toward totalitarianism. If you reward downstats adequately and sufficiently, if you can get labor unions to raise their wages high enough, if you can cut back production enough, one day it all crashes. And then the capitalistic system is gone, and in its place is a moneyless, exchangeless, total dictatorship. Now, I'm not talking through my hat. We have had occasion to study this considerably. You are therefore doing establishment actions into the teeth of the propaganda which is continuously put out by the totalitarianist. For instance, in the United States, with inflating currency, they're trying to cut it down to a four-hour day and a three-day week. But look, inflation is caused by lack of production. Too much production without enough money to buy the produce is what causes a depression. But that usually follows too much money released without enough produce. You haven't got enough production, so the money doesn't cover the produce. The vaulting, skyrocketing condition of money with regard to production right now is criminal. There's practically no production in keeping with the amount of money which is being turned out by the printing presses, regardless of what excuse. So actually, organizations are moving into the teeth of money which is lessening in value. Money is cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And there's more and more and more of it that buys less and less and less. Along with that comes this totally outpoint propaganda that one ought to have a three-day work week and 4 hours a day. And there ought to be fantastic quantities of welfare so that over 50% of the nation's expense and so forth is placed on welfare, not to make anybody well, not to provide medical treatment for them, not really, although some of them go in that direction. So you're into an era of welfareism, as I talk to you. The propaganda is actually there to make more and more and more money for less and less and less produce, so that you get a crash of the capitalist system so that another system can be substituted. That system is called socialism. And this is the basic pattern of conquest of socialism. Originates with the Fabian Society in 1883. We notice the great popularity of Shaw these days, George Bernard Shaw, My Fair Lady, and so forth. He was their principal author, and he wrote their basic planning. Their basic philosopher was Hegel. And you wonder, well, why, if Russia and Germany have the same philosophy, then why did they go to war? According to Hegel, that all these socialists follow, the mental health of a people depends exclusively on their having wars. Now you say, that's too incredible. Yeah, well, I've got it in blocked out print. Right square in the middle of the textbook, quoted liberally by the socialists. They quote that phrase. So if they can cause enough war that causes enough expense, then that will be the end of the capitalistic system, and there will be no medium of exchange. To hell with a capitalist system. I think my great-grandfather owned about half of the state of Nebraska as a skinflint banker. And he died unmourned by the whole state. I do not hold with the banker capitalism, but a medium of exchange. to eradicate a medium of exchange totally eradicates freedom. Now you have total slavery, because the guy has only himself. He can buy nothing. Now this is how Russia tries to operate. If you ever had to work out an organization in the middle of a totalitarianism which no longer had a capitalistic background, there would be an element missing which you would find very difficult to get over, and that is this element called exchange. In Russia, they're picked up and thrown in jail for selling a spare pair of their shoes. They're known as a capitalist. Now, this gets pretty weird. How do you get over this? Now, there's the direction the world is going. Therefore, organizations which run on this basis will be the order of the day. Democracy is on its way out. Been on its way out for some time. I think it really exited from the world when they killed God knows how many men on how many muddy battlefields in World War I to make the world safe for it. It not only was made not safe for it, it set up the world for totalitarianism. Democracy depends exclusively on the informedness of the individual citizen. But regardless of all of this, this is the way the world is going. Now let's just look at the isness of the situation. You, as establishment officers, deal with the isness of the situation. Now what can you establish and how can you establish it? In the teeth of money buys very little, no matter how much there is of it, and you have no basic exchange. Now that is a problem which I'm afraid you will be facing somewhere up the line out in the society. Remember this. Regardless of whether there is money, there must be exchange. Now that exchange factor can be such that the individual on his post only has a product when that product can be exchanged at least with some other part of the org. There must be an exchange. In exchange for what he produces, he gets what he gets. Now, this doesn't happen to mean necessarily on an individual basis. As his hat, as a post in that department, he has no right to the services of any other part of the org unless he himself is producing on that post something which goes to some other part of the org. Do you follow me? Isn't enough for him then to pile up a whole bunch of paper in front of him? Let's take a finished test. Now that test is of use to others. And because that test is being done and somebody's doing tests, two things would have to happen. They would have to be needed and wanted by others, and they would have to be of such a character as to be useful to others. And when they're useful to somebody else, then it is a product. And when it is of no use to anybody else, it is not product. So two things can happen. The fellow can be producing something which he thinks or hopes might be useful to somebody else, but isn't. Or he is doing it in such a way that it is of no use to anybody else. Now, the first one is sold by salesmanship. Maybe this thing is of use to somebody else, but they don't know about it. Supposing you had an organization that knew nothing of the use of tests. Your test IC just goes on, turns out test, turns out test, turns out test, turns out test. There's all kinds of tests sitting around, but there's nobody using these things. Well, what's missing is the PR and advertisement of the post. In other words, the first formula of non-existence has not been met. Find a comm line, find out what's needed and wanted, produce it. Now, any post will be a non-existence, any department will be a non-existence, any division will be a non-existence, and any org will be a non-existence. Providing they don't solve that. And any civilization will be a non-existence. Unless that's solved. I'm fascinated with all the trouble they have with balance of payments. You know what that is, don't you? That's England pays, gets so many goods and transfers so much money to the country that, or so much goods or something like that. Well, that's fine, except, and this is where the capitalist takes his finger off his number. He's always getting in there, making himself a fool, so that he sets himself up as a clay pigeon for the communist. England cannot transfer machinery it makes for apples it uses. You say, well, yeah, it's obvious they do. No, they don't. That has to go through an exchange of gold, and that's why they have to have paper gold these days. The machinery, it exports. Value of that has to be procured from a World Bank. Bunch of fat cats sitting around, don't know anywhere near as much about economics as an office boy. But they sure know how to lick it up. That nation that received this machinery has got to go to a central bank and there get gold so that it can transfer its balance of payment debt to England. Do you follow? It can only pay that in gold. Now, England, when it buys apples, has to go through an international bank exchange, get gold, and transfer it to the country from which it bought machinery. That is why all this concentration on gold. Now, do you follow this now? Do you follow this? Here you've got two countries who could be exchanging directly, who are exchanging through a middleman. The middleman is the international banker. He's making capitalism very unpopular. So people can be sold on the idea that he ought to be eradicated. Then what would you get? What would you get? You would get apples going to Northumbria or Balawagville in return for the coconuts made in Balawagville for the apples. But the difficulty is, of the barter system, it's the item is not interchangeable. Now, whenever you get a crucial failure, you drop into the barter system. You do not drop into further Keynesian economics. You drop into the barter system, and it dropped directly. So that money has to represent something. Money has to represent something of which there is some. That sounds very elementary, but very true. If there's no gold, there will be eventually no real money. So economics can get so fouled up that although you have plenty of service in the org, the economic system with the surrounding community is such that you don't get any exchange. Then you would be in the barter system. So you do have an answer. When all goes to hell, you've still got some kind of a barter system. Now, it's basically some kind of a barter system that is working in an org, but usually it comes back in terms of money. Just the appropriation of running a department is a contribution. Just the fact that money, the org puts out money for the fellow to run tests, is a contribution. But as long as that is the limit of your action, and as long as all your exchange is inside the organization, you go broke. So there must be an exchange with another public. Now the Sea Org, and I'll show you how rough this can be. The Sea Org slipped up on this in that it was exchanging with Scientology orgs. But that was exchanging within the same body or type or class of public. So it started to go broke. Because the Scientology orgs were not adequately exchanging with the public around them. And that's when you saw me put in the paid completion stat. Things have started to look better ever since because it forces them to produce something they can exchange for money. A lot of them became very dishonest and started processing only staff. To get a paid completion stat. They have not yet learned this idea of exchange. Now, you may or may not have followed me all the way through that, but it's very, very important to you for this reason. You can have an org that is so busy exchanging all of its products internally, it'll go broke while being beautifully established. Gorgeously established, broke. Then it no longer has the money or the goods with which to maintain its establishment, and you have failed. You have failed at that point as an establishment officer. Why? Because you are the FP committees. You, as the FP committee, have to demand, before you can make an allocation or expenditure, an estimate of what is going to be made, and that is defined to you as exchange. And if you have this function as an establishment officer, then it will keep your establishment on a sensible pattern by which you can then exchange something between the organization and the division and so on, which you're busy organizing, and another public. Another public. Now, if you're all on an FP, it's got to be the outside public. It's got to be a non-Scientology public, really, or it's got to be the field Scientology public. It can't be the org public. And right now, this is so little known that there are several orgs getting a paid completion stat by processing their staff members. It's impossible. It's not paid. To that degree, the stat is falsified. For a long time, I tried to trace, why do we have a high paid completion stat in orgs and a low GI? Now, when you do an investigation, you actually have to learn how to think like an idiot. Because you're just going down and finding the widest, biggest outpoint for why is really the biggest outpoint, which then explains all other outpoints, that you can do something about. And that is really what a why is, if you want to give it a reverse look. That's why your investigations are always out, point, out, point, out, point. If you continuously be logical, you're going to wind up with a logical why. And that's never the why. The logical why is called reasonableness. So what was this difference? Yeah, you have to learn how to think like an idiot to do evaluations, because it's always some idiocy. That's why the outpoints are really a description of idiocy. And that's why you count them. Half the time, a person cannot loosen his wits up enough from being logical to see the illogic that is the outpoint. He's just stuck on being thinking only in a rational, reasonable pattern. To get any place, you got to be able to think in an illogical pattern. Then you can do evaluations, bang, bang, bang. So, there you are, you're doing FP. And first thing you find out, nobody in the FP committee has had it, that's the usual step. That's the usual why that is given repeatedly, repeatedly, repeatedly. When you do this, there are two steps to FP. One is making sure that the org buys the necessities which it needs to produce. And the other one is make sure there's going to be enough coming in to cover subsequent FPs, and the FP which you're busy doing has got to buy something. It's got to buy something. It's got to buy future income. And the guiding rule of an FP is covered in exchange. You're not going to FP anything for a division that isn't producing anything that anybody can use. I don't care how beautifully they have their front door painted. So you really FP by stats. To get stats. And the guiding principle of FP is, of course, exchange. And unless you know something about exchange, you're putting these facilities here. The reason you're establishing something here is so that it will produce something which will then exchange with another group, which has and produces something you need in order to keep on going. And you can just shake the economics out of the whole thing beyond that. You can shake bankers and capitalism and money and totalitarianism and every other damn thing as long as you keep that in mind. There is a way to get through this. Exchange. The org is going to give this factory so many hours of processing in exchange for barter. And you could have an economics system go all to hell, and you could still operate if you know that. But in any event, it's exchange. What do you need to operate? All right, now that's easy. It's money. Supposing it wasn't money. Well, you would need this to operate and that to operate. You'd probably need state support in some fashion or another. You'd need so many OKs on so many shoe, food, bread coupons or something like that. Now, we're moving into the future with orgs. And there's many an economic curve being thrown at the society at this particular time. So don't get caught flat-footed. Be quick on your feet. It always takes five times as much to operate as you think it will. After you've FP'd and think you have your cash bills ratio all straight and everything is fine, then what do you find? Somebody has hidden a great many bills in a mouse hole someplace, and they drag them forth proudly, and you find out that you're another $10,000 down that you never dreamed of. Now, put all this together, and what do you get? You get an establishment officer is establishing something which produces something that will exchange for what you need in order to establish. And you have said everything there is to say about it. If you can think in those terms, then you would be a very smart operator. Now, you talk about outpoints. What would you think of a Treasury Department 7 that would never get out statements in such a way as to get in any money, when that was all you were dependent on and you weren't doing a cash business? What would you think of that? They even had orders to write persuasive letters and to add it up in such a way that the individual leaves the org without paying his bill or something like that, can be tagged with it personally, so that's a forcer on him to go ahead and make the org run. And things like that. Supposing orders have been issued to this extent. And they have all been neglected. And it won't get out effective statements so as to make effective collections. What would you think of an activity which had innumerable field staff members who are quite capable of collecting money, and never bothered to look in the personnel files, old ethics files, and so forth, to find $1.5 million worth of freeloaders to collect? It isn't that freeloaders don't pay, it's the fact they're never billed. The majority of businesses that go broke in the United States go broke because they don't send out statements. You say, well, look, that's idiocy. That's right. All errors are idiocy. Businesses that they check over and so forth, they find out they never sent out any bills. We have a set of attorneys right now in Panama, and those birds have never sent an effective bill. I suddenly found out, to my horror, we hadn't paid them anything, ever. They never seemed to bill. Or if they billed, they sent the stuff to a wrong address, and they never followed it up. So that nobody found out they hadn't been paid. Just a simple matter of names and addresses. Elementary. Not a matter of money at all. Now, supposing you had a Treasury division that did this. Now, what would you do as an ESTO? What would you do as an ESTO conference? You found you were having a hell of a time with FP, that people were economizing on you all over the place. And they were telling you that you couldn't have this and you couldn't have that. You desperately know the crew needed uniforms. What would you do? Would you just say, isn't it terrible those finance people won't give us this money? Because that's normally what's done. I've even heard of somebody in the org saying, well, Ron doesn't pay me very much. That's the wildest thing I've ever heard. When that came in through to me, I wrote him a long letter and told him the facts fly. He makes his own pay. But what would you do? The answer is too logical to be viewed. You would make more money. How do you make more money? You make sure that the divisions are established in such a way that they produce something which can be exchanged with the society around them. And you make sure that if the org has earned a great deal of money, it gets collected. You don't sit there and worry about the difficulties you're having with FP. Now, you'll find some mad ones come along these lines. We have a mad one right now that is in progress. A management organization, by policy, must be supported by the service organization to which it is attached. Why? If it's any damn good as a management organization, the service organization to which it's attached will be able to make enough money. And if it's not good enough as a management organization to do that, it has no business hanging on somebody else's heels to hell and gone on the other side of the world. Right? So, the policy worked out, and it was worked out over years, and we found out definitely that a management organization of a continent or something like that had to be supported by the service organization to which it was attached. If that didn't happen, all was lost. But what do you know? Very few people ever got this fact. Why? There was nobody there to check out the policy letter. And that condition exists right at this present moment. By all means, run an economical organization. There is no point in wasting money. But you get any group or body that sits together, and you ask them about finance, they always come up with the wrong action. We'll economize. It's the inevitable answer. It's the wrong formula. They're in emergency, so they try to run affluence. You see, it's inevitably, continuously the wrong answer. An organization must never be run by either a lawyer or an accountant. They will both try to move into the field of management, and they will both try to tell you what to do. And they are the two types of individuals who are not qualified to run an organization. Why? Because their think is wrong. The lawyer's think is caution. The accountant's think is just the money he sees on the ledger in front of him. He does not envision making money. He envisions money in, money out. And when he sees these two figures, they are concrete facts to him. Everything else is airy-fairy, and he isn't in the management know enough. So he looks over here, and he sees, well, we made this much in the last quarter, and therefore we will only be able to spend this much in the next quarter. Well, that's all sensible, and that's true, and that's safe. But my God, can you go broke that way? Neither one of them ever have. I've had a lawyer, for instance, stop an organization, shut its doors. He was the head of an organization. For 10 days one time. And you know, the org never caught up with it. To find out if it was legal. The answer, kiddies, is to make more money. Then is the time when you half the living daylights out of all the product officers in sight. Then is the time when you half the living daylights out of the registrar. You half the living daylights out of Division 6. And you get in there and you look into seven and you say, let's get hatted. Let's get producing. Let's get those statements correct. Oh, you don't have any name for Mrs. Glutz now. How about going to the CF folder and finding her last known address? You get busy. You get busy establishing the living Christ out of every one of those terminals who regulates exchange. The answer is make more money, and the establishment's answer is hat 'em, find their wives on them personally, pull a rug out from underneath all the illogics they're sitting on, and get them in there working. Working sweat. Provide a sponge on their desk, sitting in a bowl of water to mop off the sweat, but get them working. And that's how you handle an organization's deficits. So you do FP committee, and you make sure that they do have the necessities in order to be able to do this. And then at that moment, you are told by the FBO that he's sorry, but your allocation this month will only be one-third of the vital running expense line. And that you will have to cut down, and that is the statement that will come back to you. You cut down, you're going to get less income. You start not paying staff, and your morale starts going out through the bottom. Do you know that I have one of the jobs, one of my hats, is making sure staffs get paid? You'd be surprised, because every time they run a deficit, they say, well, in fact, it's just been across my desk today, just suddenly realizing. Once again, it's just periodic. It is so easy to say, oh, well, cut the staff's pay. Don't pay the staff. That's simple. We don't have to think. That requires no strain. No strain on the brain. We don't have to wake up, get the attention spanned, look over things, get busy. No, cut the staff pay. And that cuts the rug out from underneath you. Now you'll have morale factors. Now you'll have this. Now you'll have that. Now you'll have other things. So if pay can't be cut, if the staff is actually going forward and doing its job, there's another area that can be hit. Is there food? If you're feeding your staff and taking care of them, why, food can be cut. If you can't cut their food too much, you can always eradicate uniforms. You see, it goes from this to that to the other thing. And you're trying to put together a nice, bright, brassy organization. If you've got a project force working, don't let it have any paint. If you let it have some paint, don't let it have any scrapers. All of their work is wasted. They'll just stand around, or they just paint over the rust, and it's no good at all. You got it? Now, the answer, kiddies, is make more money. I, by the way, let me tell you a little anecdote. I had a bad experience with this one time. I told the wrong man. I told my father this one time. I got tired of all of his talking about me and money and so forth. He knew nothing about money, and he knew nothing about me. He'd been a naval officer all of his life. I was often making a month what he made in a year. I don't know. The unreality of people is gorgeous. And he told me that once too often. And I was just out of hospital. It was at the end of war. My temper was rather short. And I turned on him and I said, look, I said, don't go telling me this anymore. I've listened to it most of my life, and it's not true. I said, look at yourself. You've been making money all of your life. You haven't got anything to show for it. You spend your money like a drunken sailor. Now, why don't you make more money? So he did. He got a hold of my yacht and sold it. Anyhow. And having done that, he sold my ranch. Well, anyway, he made more money. So it doesn't always work that the message goes through straight. But it is the answer. It is the answer. If you have had it, according to policy, and not had it off a lot of squirrel offbeat actions, if you have made sure that you don't have using policy to stop, they can do that, by the way, by always applying the wrong policy letter. All you got to do is take the policy letter that applies to A, and instead of following that, find another one that really doesn't really apply to A, but find something in it that can be construed as to apply to this, and they say, well, you see, we can't do that. Policy was designed to tell people things they could do. And when it tells them not to do something, it's trying to put edges on the channel so they won't go off of it. But what channel? The channel of doing something right. When you say this is a high crime PL, it means we've had enough of it. It's been too prevalent. This why is big enough and prevalent enough and has been in the past to become a policy why. So don't. But that doesn't stop anybody from going down the main channel. Now, if a fellow doesn't know the policy that gives him the main channel and only knows the policy that tells him to stop, then you will get people using policy to stop. Do you follow? There is always policy that tells them how to go on the channel. If they only specialize in stop, that's terrible. Well, there's one thing that you must know, that any group of thetans can get best agreement on a stop. They will most readily agree on a stop. That's any group of thetans. It's one of the reasons democracies don't work. That's what you know as groupthink. That's a very funny one. That's how they all get sort of frozen. If you're not able to put in the public lines, and if you can't get a student into and out of an org, you know then that you have a group think, and it's a stop think. They don't know the ways to do things, and they've only agreed on the ways to stop things. So you want to get a lot of do policies going right away. You'll see that. You have seen it in the past. You can't fire somebody. You can't finish the guy up on his course. He always gets recircled in some way. And so forth. It's just an unhaddedness. The guys don't know the purpose of the thing. Now, at that point, you are facing people who don't know anything about exchange, that they have to have something to exchange. For instance, an auditor in their everyday auditing thinks he is producing by giving hours of auditing. No, those are the actions of production. He hasn't produced yet. He will only produce when he's done the program. And in any org where you have auditors only putting in hours, and if you go and open a few folders and find out that they're full of unfinished programs, then you know they have the wrong idea of production. So you get them together and you explain what production is. It's a finished PC. How finished? That whole cycle. Now, you know, you can get scattered PCs scattered all through an org, and the org starts caving in, and everybody you talk to is halfway through and has been halfway through, or a quarter of the way through, or an eighth of the way through his program for the last year. You go and get somebody who is sick, and you look and you find out that he was red-tabbed 8 months ago. Nobody has finished the program. There's no production think in that HCC. Naturally, it's only a finished PC that you could exchange with something. What do you exchange it with? Well, even if you were just exchanging it with the org is counting on the HGC to put this guy in some kind of shape. And it isn't the session that puts somebody in shape, it's the program. Auditors, day by day, they say, look how busy we are, our hours are up, and they can push their hours up without any exchange at all. And then they finally get the whole field and so forth. There is one org right now that just got through telling us how Flag was missing data, and we hear that every now and then. And along with the same statement will come some horrendous outpoint. They were the guys sending the data, don't you see? So Flag is missing data or Flag is misinformed, they did it. So they're just complaining about themselves. But the point I'm making here is we said that this person, I'll give you a rough paraphrase of it, what are you doing with 576 hours of processing backlogged? We said to this Ed. And this Ed sent back, Flag has been misinformed. The data's incorrect. Very protesty, very make wrong, I'm right, very surface fact. It isn't 576 hours, it's 576 PCs. And they are not backlogged. There are 106 of them in medical, on medical lines. There's 201 of them on ethics lines. And the remainder on cramming lines or something. You never believe it. You could work all day and all night and have nightmares all day and all night, and you'd never come up with an outpoint like that. But this is sent to us as a refutation of our villainous accusation that they were backlogged. And sure enough, they never seem to be able to make their targets, and they never make their stats, and their GDSs are pretty down, and cash is bad. Now do you see why I'm talking to you about exchange? They haven't exchanged a damn one of those products with society. So not having exchanged it, they are now backlogged all the money they've been paid. They really still owe it because they never delivered anything for it. 576 PCs be damned. They're probably backlogged in terms of owing the society, really. Some huge amount. Maybe their last year's income. Cristo. God, help us all. In other words, we thought it was a little situation. It's not. It's a fantastic situation. So they've been sitting there not exchanging anything with the society. And then they wonder why their stats are down and why they're picked on and so forth. They just don't understand exchange. Now, there's an executive series on this subject which I wrote for your use. And it talks about exchange, and it talks about economics, and so on. I wrote a little executive series. And it's very important. But it shows up in such a thing as the HGC, or the staff auditors, don't even exchange a product with the rest of the org. So you're busy supporting these staff auditors? You're giving them the service and the room to audit people? So they can do what? So they can make the whole org one quarter done on urgent programs. Well, then they backlogged the whole org because they never produced a product. Just as a blown student is not a product, so is an incomplete program not a product. Now, we're not now talking about the advanced program of taking the guy all the way from Dianetics to OT6. We're just talking about just that, usually a red sheet, or what you call a tip program, right in the front of that folder. And you look in those staffs, the staff auditors' lines, and look at the crew being audited. And what do you find? They're not done. And then another program has to be written to fill in the fact that that wasn't done, and then that done, and then another one has to be done to fill in the gaps of the second program that didn't get done, and then the fourth program gets written. Oh, you think it's not true. You go down and look at some folders, and you'll see where it has happened. Now, I catch up on this with a person getting sick. When a person gets sick, I send for his folder, and this is usually what I find. A person has an accident, or a person is very upset and is trying to blow, or something like this. I send for his folder, and what do I find? I find program done to handle the case, 8 or 9 months, stale dated, with 1/3 of the program done. The rest of it stale dated. So that, in a Scientology organization, is what accounts for your illness and injury. In the largest number of factors. The staff auditor does not take the case. Yeah, well, other people are coming in and saying, this guy's got to be audited right now, and this guy will have an assist auditor, is the way you get around that. He's just an assist auditor. He has touch assists and runs out the last automobile accident and the delivery and something. Just an assist auditor. That's all he does. It's usually one of the better word clearers. He's also assigned the double hat of assist auditor. And when the guy is fed into staff auditing on a staff member, get it done. It goes right on down the rest of the program, and it is done, and then he's a finished product. That's it. And then gradually, one by one by one, while you make it, then you all of a sudden have a functional audited staff. But this other thing, boof. Now, this works on courses. The guy's been programmed for this, that, and the other thing. You start checking around, and you find out person after person has course after course that they never completed. And every one of these incomplete courses is an incomplete cycle of action, and you'll eventually get up to about 4 incomplete courses, and then suddenly what do you collide with? You collide with a fellow who doesn't study anymore. Do you know that you could take your raw Dianetic students or 0 to 4 students in an academy that was showing tendencies to blow, just check up on how many courses they had not finished before they ever got into that org or Scientology, and you would blow a lot of charge on them. Incomplete cycles of action. And this is not a product. And the guy can become so incomplete and so not a product that he can't be made into a product until you've remedied it. Am I making sense? That's a product. Finished. Exchangeable. Now, because orgs are paid before they deliver the service, Ernesto is walking uphill against this, because people can keep saying, well, we're paid, and not deliver the full service. So you have to safeguard against it. The promise of a book is not a delivered book. A book is not a product until it is fully printed, promoted, and in the public's hands. Then it's the product. Because exchange has to do with it, right? So you get back to establishment. What are you doing? You'd better establish something that finishes things. And you'd better hack people to finish things. Otherwise, your joys of FP will mostly be sorrows. But you're in a position to really put an org into production, providing they know what a product is. Now, just as an aside, just as I think of it, the wrong way to hat is from the bottom up. The wrong way to post an org board is from the bottom up. You start posting org boards from the bottom up, you're in trouble. Well, you start hatting from the bottom up, you're in trouble. And you can hat and hat and hat and hat in the lower echelons without really producing any marked change in production, because your production is being regulated from the top. It's what the top tolerates. So you post an org board always from the top. If there's only one person in the boat, he's the captain. More small boat wrecks because the guy thinks he's a deckhand or something. And you hat from the top down. You always hat from the top down. And that's very difficult because he right away thinks that you should be hatting the lower ones because he knows that's the why. And although it's very true that it may also be the why, you had better hat from the top down, because if the fellow cannot play the piano, that is to say, regulate the division, why, he won't get it producing. And so your hatting actions and your FP actions, your exchange actions, and all these other actions will mostly go to waste. They can be beautifully misused. You don't specialize for the next year, however, in just hatting the senior. This cycle of you hat a bit and get him to produce, and then hat him some more and get him to produce, is just run all the way up and down. Now, you are running a long-term program. And it's entirely different than an auditing program, because you had him a little bit and get him working, and had him a little bit and get him working, and had him a little bit more and get him working, and had him a little bit more and get him working. You are not ever going to be able to finish a finished product and then say, there he is on post, because there is a thing called on-the-job training. And you're doing mostly on-the-job training. Therefore, it's only just that Ernesto do the bulk of his actions as on-the-job training. Definition of Ernesto, somebody who does without sleep so that he can study during his sleeping hours in order to know all the answers for his working hours. That's definition. All right, now I've talked to you a lot about exchange, and you say, well, that doesn't have much to do with Scientology. And we have here on Scientology 8-8008, on page 1, we have the factors. And the factors mostly concern exchange. Probably never realized that before. Before the beginning was a cause, and the entire purpose of the cause, the creation of an effect. In the beginning and forever is decision, decision is to be. Let's assume a viewpoint, and so on. And number 7 is, and from the viewpoint to the dimension points, there are connection and interchange. Thus, new dimension points are made, and there is communication. Exchange. The truth of the whole thing is that a thetan does what he does so that he can exchange. And if a thetan can't exchange anything, he gets very miserable and very unhappy, and that is one of the reasons why production is the basis of morale. Elementary. So therefore, when I talk to you about exchange, I'm talking to you really about the factors. And if you want to look into those, study it over, you'll see that it all fits. That's the way life runs. Now, we've got here... We've got here various... definitions, which I've already defined for you, but an established thing I've already defined, establishing something, means that it's been put there so that it is capable and does produce high volume, high quality production with an absence of devity. So when you get to a point where you say that is established, you know when you have made it. The guy can do a high volume, high quality product. And he doesn't do it in such a way as to create devity. Now, that tells you when you have established something. And a product, I've already said to you what it is. It's a finished, high-quality service or thing in the hands of the being or group it serves as an exchange for a valuable. Tells you right away that a lot of surveys could be run, which would give you a false answer. It's what do you think is nice. Let's survey the public and find out what do you really like and what do you think is nice and so forth, and then miss the boat. They don't tell you anything they would think would be valuable enough that they would be willing to give value for the receipt of. So a survey that is really a survey tells you the exchangeability of what they really like. What do they consider valuable enough to exchange something for? So the consideration of being willing to give something to receive this produced thing is really the test of a well-produced, well-promoted, well-sold thing. It isn't just something. Somebody will say, yeah, well, these paper dolly Rolls Royces are fine, but they wouldn't pay anything for them. They like them, but they wouldn't pay anything for them. In other words, it's not an exchange value. So all surveys are really valid when they establish what a person will give up something valuable in exchange for. What would you give for happiness? Suppose the guy says happiness. How much would you pay for happiness? Guy's liable to say, I won't pay anything for happiness. Well, then you'd better survey in such a way to find out what he would pay something for. Of course, people do pay things for happiness. But just giving you an example, there is the exchange factor back of that. So when is a post established? When the post is able to produce an exchange factor. He's not established. You can take that all the way down in New York. Actually, a good janitor who produces a high quality, high volume of service, he's got an exchange going with the org. The org's perfectly willing to give him valuables in return for that. Do you follow? You can go around to staff and so forth. How do you think the janitor takes care of the place? Oh, I think he does a great job. Then you've got an established janitor. Go around the org. What do you think of the janitor? Oh, God, if he just messes up these papers on my desk, it's one more time. You haven't got an exchange factor. get the test? All right, they don't want to exchange a valuable for it. And you'll find out you won't be able to get it in either. All right. A program is the bridge between establishment and production. That's what bridged it over. That tells you the direction it's got to be established. Now, you could just establish something. You could establish the prettiest receptionist you ever wanted to see, all beautifully dressed up and all sitting there and all nice and clean and not even chewing gum and so forth. Very nice looking. It didn't produce any receptions. Didn't know where to send anybody. And people left the organ droves. Doesn't produce anything. So how would you know you had a receptionist? No divity. That's an easy test. But how about the production? Now, those people cheered up happily, and rooted in all directions to the right terminal every time, wham, 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 and the right rooting form is whipped out, and the person's name put on it, and all ARC, and there's no friction on the line, and there's no waiting, and zim, zing, 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 and if the person's also answering the phone or something like that, they sound all right, and so forth. In other words, are people willing to pay for this receptionist? Now, that'd be quite a receptionist. Now, you set yourself up a task of, if there was a coin box here, and it said on it, don't do this, and it said on this, put your $1 fee for having been well receptioned in this box, would it collect any dollars? Now, boy, you've really had a receptionist, if it would. See what your test would be. And you never heard of anybody tipping a receptionist or an elevator operator or something like that. But if you established one to a point where people tried to, boy, you got it made. See how exchange fits in. Well, now, what is she going to reception? Well, there could be a program of when so-and-so and such comes in, they are so-and-so, and they are receptioned. That would tell her what she receptions. That's what she specializes in. The reception at the London Org once wasn't had. 125 people crowded in the matter of about an hour, and she shoved them all out the front door. They ran a health crusade handout program. People stormed into the org like mad, and they wanted to know all about it, and it was a failed crusade because only two of them signed up for major services. It never occurred to anybody to give them the standard minor services. Now, the program, which wasn't ever written for this, did not include the reception and what she was supposed to do. It wasn't that she acted like an idiot. She actually did, but she went into a total panic. Small office, she's 125 people. She thinks she's being stormed. It puts her back into on the track when they lynched her. And so, no program included the receptioning of the response expected from this. What do you do with them? it would be Jenin, the receptionist, onto the disposal of the people who were calling back for this, and have her give them a waffle waffle and a tuple pup to report at the Winglebing at such and such hours. Program is the bridge between the establishment and the production. Now, if she may be established as a receptionist, but nobody programmed her as to what to do with these gents. Do you see that? It was a special change of pace. It was a hell of a change of pace went on there. They'd been getting one person a day or three people a day or something like this, and all of a sudden in an hour or hour and a quarter or something like that, she had 125 people come in. Boom! She didn't know what to do with them, and so on, and that was it, and she pushed them all out into the street and go away and closed the door in terror. Now, she might have been an established receptionist, but you couldn't establish a receptionist for every possible contingency or emergency. Now, all of a sudden, we say we're going to run triples or something on PCs. We're going to triple up their grades or we're going to do something like that. But nobody's ever told the auditors. Now, they'd have to be specially genned in, and they'd have to be brought into cramming, and they would have to be told how you triple things and be checked out on the bulletins and do a bit of a drill or two if this was the coming thing. Otherwise, they wouldn't know. They would come from the registrar. They would go down to the HGC. Tech services would try to assign them, wouldn't have any auditors because none of them were qualified to run triples. And that was the explanation which came back as to why triples weren't delivered. We didn't have any auditors trained to run them. But 2 weeks before that program went out, all the bulletins were forwarded to HGCs to check out on the auditors in order to do this. But there was no establishment officer there to make sure it was done. Program. Now you say the establishment officer, well, it should be the program officer. No, the program officer would alert the establishment officer as to what program was in progress and what checkouts would have to be done. The establishment officer just have to make sure that the lines and actions and personnel existed in order to do the checkout rather than check them out himself. But he'd have to make sure that that existed. Otherwise, you could establish and establish and establish and establish, and you would never wind up with a product because there's no bridge. Because the product shifts, the product changes, various things happen. But if these things are never written up, and if there's nobody around establishing an org on which those things can then be put in, so you can establish a basic post, and then there's a further establishment on a program. The establishment officer has to make sure that that program can be checked out, whether he checks it out or not. You'd have to get somebody, let us say, into admin cramming to check out something or other. You know, some program comes along. Program says, make sure that all executives are checked out on something or other, and it's up to that moment the establishment officer conference has got to say, is there anybody there to do it? No, we haven't had any admin cramming. As a matter of fact, there hadn't been a tech cramming here for some time. Oh, my God, where the hell is he? Let's disestablish Division 6 so that we can establish Division 5. This kind of think in desperation. Do you see? So that there's basic establishment, and there's the establishment so something can roll as a production. And that bridge point is the program officer. And he can come around and tell the ESTO what he wants. In this way, establishment merges over into production, merges over into exchange. Now, that is how it is done. Now, the hideous error that an establishment officer can commit is to get involved with the traffic of the division. It's very easy to recognize this as audits and PCs. That's easy. start interviewing students. Yeah, it's obvious that that would be a wrong action. But there's a little hairline between the actual legitimate traffic of the org and the establishment of the org. And that little hairline is establishing it in such a way as the org will flow and adjusting the establishment of the org so that it will produce. So the adjustment of the establishment pattern so that production can occur is a legitimate duty of the ESTO. Well, we're going to clear words on a lot of public and a lot of high school, and it's in the program, and there's the high school, and they got a lot of failed students over there, and they're going to bring them in and word clear them, and it's a great program, and somebody's had this idea, and they knew the principal, and they're all going to get $500 apiece for doing it, and it's a marvelous thing. And this program comes out, and the qual division is not established to render that service. Then for the QEO, flat out, had better establish it to do so. It means an additional piece of establishment. Now, there's another error that can occur, is after that program is all gone and dead and is over, he's sitting there with 8 word clearers who haven't got any business. Traffic load is an essential duty of the establishment officer, to measure traffic load. Now this gets over into the efficiency expert. The only thing a WOG efficiency expert ever managed to do was do time motion studies. And they're very good at doing these time motion studies. They've got it down to a fine feathered frenzy. It takes a fella 1/16th of a minute to pick up the Wingle and to fit it to the Gronk. And we will reduce the number of steps that it takes this machinist to go from the drill punch over to the lathe. And we'll put these two machines closer together, and we'll rearrange the spatial arrangements of this and et cetera, and so on. That's all efficiency time motion study. It's interesting that that whole line of country has tended to sort of fade out. One of the reasons it has is nobody ever added the upper executives on it. They always worked with the guy down on the floor. They never worked with the foreman.
This lecture is continued on the next cassette.